everyone. Hope you're all doing well, staying cozy. Hope you all enjoyed your holidays with your family or alone. Totally fine. Drinking some hot cocoa. We're now in 2024. We're going to talk about 2023 a little bit. I'm already doing a best of animation list that I'm working on already for like some animated series. So I decided to not do any of those for this particular list because I like other things. So various like movies, music, anime that's new to me but old, and etc. will be on this best of list of 2023. But I thought, why not share 2023 list with friends you've seen a couple times before. We got both the Joshes on here.
Hello, hello.
Oh, in sync.
Yes.
Wow. Well done. You guys were on top of it. So how this is going to work is we are each going to go through our, we have a top 10 list. We're each going to go through our number 10, then each our number 9, and, you know, et cetera, until we go to number 1. And the rules were just anything in the medium, or like if someone had like a hobby that like really stuck with this, with 2023 specifically, it's pretty fair game. It's just media to me because I don't have any other hobbies. But yeah, I'm excited to see, because I think because it's so broad, we're going to have like a wide list of various things. There's only like maybe a few similarities, so I'm excited about it. And Josh, man, why don't you start off? What is your number 10 favorite thing of 2023?
So there's a lot of great things this year. I think we can all agree. And I really tried to keep this list like pretty much all things. All my lists are pretty much things that did come out in 2023 that aren't, you know, just new to me. Because there was so many great things, you know what I mean? It was kind of right. Easy to pick from. So my number 10 pick is a movie. A movie that I'm not sure if the other Josh is going to chime in. Maybe he saw this. I don't think you saw this yet. I could be wrong about that. But it is going to be Godzilla Minus One.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet.
What'd you say, Josh?
Seen it? No.
You've not seen it?
Nope.
Oh wow. Well, I would definitely recommend both you guys to see it at some point, because this movie is important, and it's important for a bunch of reasons. But I would say the only thing I wish about this movie is that I didn't go in expecting the hype. I think if I went in not sure what to expect, and then I got the experience I got, I think this movie would like absolutely have, you know, blown my mind. It's just people hyped it up quite a bit. So like I kind of went in with already like thinking it was going to at least be really good. You know what I mean? That said, I still think this movie is absolutely fantastic. I think it's probably the best licensed like character slash like using another like well-established, you know, world and brand like story that I've seen this year specifically, but like even like, you know, many years, you know, for the past couple of years, like this is one that definitely sticks out. I just think what makes it really good is that as great as Godzilla is in it, and as great as and fun as that is, and you know, all of the classic Godzilla stuff, what's really cool is that it's a human story, and it's about characters that you're actually gonna like. I think the Godzilla movies kind of get bogged down by a lot of like the government military talk, and they kind of become like too large scale that it's kind of hard to relate to anybody.
Right.
But in this story specifically, they really chose a centered character to be the focus point, and then the few characters around him as the supporting cast just perfectly balance everything out. And I think what it has to say about purpose and just kind of finding one's center in life and what they, you know, are ultimately able to find, you know, through life experience and just, you know, pain and trauma and all these things. I think it's really important. I think it makes perfect sense why a lot of people that saw this movie cried. I think it is a really emotional movie. There's one thing about the ending, which I'm not going to spoil or anything, but there's one thing about the ending that is a little cheesy. But aside from that, I just think it's just an extremely well done film. And the fact that we have movies like this that are able to use, you know, the Godzilla brand and stuff and be these like really creative, extremely personal stories, has just been a really inspiring note for me, and really kind of gives me faith in, you know, maybe other brands and stuff being able to approach, you know, these more larger scaled things in a more intimate way, like Godzilla Minus One did. I definitely recommend anyone to check it out. I think it's an easy crowd pleaser. I think you can watch this with pretty much anybody and have a good time, because you do have the spectacle. You have the great, you know, destroying Godzilla scenes, and you know, Godzilla is just so cool in this. He's a perfect combination between vicious, but also, you know, there's a sense of like real terror to him. There's, you know, but he's still cool. You know, it's not just like, you know, Shin Godzilla, the movie before it, kind of leans into like a tragic angle for Godzilla. This isn't necessarily a tragic Godzilla. This is just a angry Godzilla that just wants to fuck shit up. So, you know, in that regard, I think they definitely do something really, really fun and interesting with Godzilla specifically. And yeah, it's built into a great indie type, you know, family drama too. So I couldn't recommend it, you know, enough. And I think anyone that hasn't seen it, definitely give it a shot.
Nice. Now, would you say, Josh, would you say you like it more than Shin Godzilla? Like, would you say this is your favorite Godzilla movie minus the original film, of course?
Yeah, of course. I think it's definitely difficult right now. I will say there's been enough time for the initial hype of coming out of the theater to kind of dissipate a little bit enough for me to still think Shin Godzilla is better. I just think Shin Godzilla is it just hits emotionally for me. Like, I didn't really cry during Godzilla Minus One. You know, other people that you know saw it before me and after me have definitely. So like, I do believe it can, you know, get that kind of emotion. But Shin Godzilla got me like really feeling something. So I do think Shin Godzilla might be my favorite, but I will say that this is not far behind. And I do believe it's such a unique film from Shin Godzilla that it's just going to be preference at that point.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. All right, Josh Eby, what is your number 10 favorite thing of 2023?
All right, similar to Josh Mann, I decided I wanted the majority of my picks to come from this year. But I am going to throw in two honorable mentions. My number 9 and my number 10 are both old things that I experienced for the first time this year. And so my number 10 is the original Halloween movie. I watched that for the first time this year. Genre-defining movie, right? It's amazing that I've never seen it before, but I loved it. Good. The soundtrack creates suspense. Wes Craven's directing just create something that we see inspires horror movies literally to this day, and for it to still hold up well over 50 years later, I think is impressive and a testament to what a good movie it is. And the acting is okay. You know, it's pretty easy to act in a horror movie. I couldn't do it. You know, I'm not the greatest actor. However, you know, I think out of the genres, but to take this plot, which at its base point is pretty simple, and stretch it out to create this full movie, like I said, that defines a genre of slasher films. You know, Halloween's not the first slasher film, as we know, but it's the first one that I would say sort of went mainstream and created this new type of suspense movie. And so I just loved it. That was my, I don't know, my wife doesn't really like horror movies. So while she was gone one night, I was like, what do I want to watch? I just toss it on and just had such a fun time with my popcorn. So that's an honorable mention. Number 10 for me.
Awesome. Okay. My number 10 is the Chainsaw Man manga. So I've been slowly getting into manga for the first time this year. So I guess you could put just manga in general, but, and there were a couple, like, I was really thinking about putting it on here. Like, Don't Call It Mystery, I really liked a lot. There's still some others I'm thinking about, but I think I've enjoyed, since I'm just about caught up, I think I only have like 2 or 3 volumes left to catch up. I've just really enjoyed my time. It was like the perfect, like, watching as I'm going to like a convention. Like, I watched it a lot, or I read it a lot on flights. And I think, even though I probably think some of the other manga I've read are probably better than Chainsaw Man, what I've enjoyed about like the manga more and excited to see more what the anime is going to do differently is like just the way it balances its like really dark themes of like a lot what it's tackling, like with you know, control and like what's going on in the world, and how that reflects like a lot of the demons and a lot of the, and while having like this like really dope action scenes, while also having like really great, like one of my favorite parts are two of being like the slice of life moments where we kind of just get time to know the characters, and it doesn't need action to show that. We don't need exposition to, like, it just sits on certain scenes a lot. So I really appreciate Chainsaw Man doing that. But also the comedy, I just think it's really funny. There was this one scene that it wouldn't really be funny if I explained it, but there was this one panel I read where in the airport for like 10 minutes I was just holding in my laughter. Like, I was really trying not to like laugh out loud because there were people next to me, and it was really difficult. Like, there was this one scene that happened that will probably happen in the upcoming movie, because it happens during the Bomb Girl arc. If you know, you know. But yeah, it was just a really, really fun read. So yeah, I had to give it to that. But all right, moving back to Josh Mann. What is your number 9th favorite thing of 2023?
So, my number 9 favorite thing is going to be the Daniel Caesar album. So, the thing with Daniel Caesar is I've always been a fan. I've always kind of checked out his stuff. I've just loved his voice, you know, and his songwriting and all that. This album has 2 songs that I would genuinely say are song of the year contender for me. And that's Do You Like Me and Cole, which go back to back on the album. And I will say that the first time I listened to this album and those 2 songs played back to back, I was in a state of bliss that has not been mimicked throughout the rest of the year. It was such a like crazy, almost like spiritual experience for me on just a level of enjoyment and just immersion that I was felt inside the music. And then just the rest of the album is just really freaking solid. I don't really think there's any misses. There's like maybe 1 song that like I don't play all the time, but like which is called Homosexual. I'm not gonna get too far into that. It's just not a great song to me, but everything else is just really, really good. I think for people that really like a R&B that has like a moodiness aesthetic to it, like if you know, if you guys are a big Frank Ocean fan, or you know, in that vein of art, like the type of R&B you like, this is what I would definitely say is like the band-aid to like a Frank Ocean album. Like, it covers that itch, and honestly, like, it's probably gonna be at least on par, if not better, than the next Frank Ocean album, if we ever do even get one. So I think that this just kind of hit for me the way I needed it to, and like I said, 2 songs off of it that are absolutely song of the year contenders for me. And I mean, it's already crazy to have one song off an album that's that list, because I do listen to a lot of music. At least I try to. So the fact that there's two and they're right back to back, it had to at least secure my number nine spot. So that is Daniel Caesar's Never Enough.
Nice. Josh Eby, what is your number nine favorite thing of 2023?
All right. My number nine is the only other thing on my list that didn't come out this year. And I'll be honest, it could be one or two or three if it came out this year, because this is one of the most beautiful pieces of media I've seen in my life. And that sounds like an exaggeration, but it's Jack Stauber's Opal. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. It's a short film.
Yes.
It is beautiful. Okay. It's claymation as well as some live action shots. I'm a big fan of David Lynch, and there's some Lynchian elements, I would say. I think it's the best thing this guy's ever made. Like I said, it deals with childhood trauma and child neglect in a very unique and clever way. At the start of the film, I'm not going to spoil any of it, but I didn't know where the ending was going to be. And when I saw the ending scene, it just hit and I was crushed. And the claymation is super fun to watch. Stauber is a musician as well. So there's a couple musical numbers throughout the film that really help set the tone and just paint each character that he introduces into the scene. And it's one of the most, it's just heart-wrenching, I would say, in a way that it's just sad that some kids really go through things this dark. You know, everyone has things from their past that are difficult to deal with, but to see it as a grown-up, just looking on it and just know that there are kids going through neglect and abuse and things like that, and there's not much I can do about it other than just support people who I know are going through traumatic things in their life. But I think he does a good job of raising awareness and just letting people know that, you know, you're not alone, in a really dark and horrifying way. But I would recommend it to anyone. It's sad and it's dark, but just raising awareness that people are going through these things. And, you know, if you're out there going through something, you're not alone. But you've seen it, Josh, man?
I have.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic pick, Lamisa.
Nice. Yeah, great pick. My number nine is Amber Rae's Found Baby. My favorite, like, fun listen of 2023. Oh, we lost Josh Eby. Hopefully he'll come back. But yeah, I just really enjoyed this album a lot. It's very, I just appreciate how bold it is, being so like multi-genre, of combining so many, like having R&B and pop and so many other different types of styles, and taking some inspiration from so many various different things. And like the lyrics are just, I'm not the greatest at explaining like why I love like music and stuff, but like just the production and the lyrics like were like just a lot of fun. And yeah, her vocals are just absolutely incredible, the way she's, her different vocal tones she's able to do, just really like impressive stuff. Like I've been continuously going back to this one listen by listen, and you know, if she comes around my area, might see her in concert. But Josh, man, kicking it back to you, what is your eighth favorite thing of 2023?
Well, I just want to say great pick. That album is absolutely fantastic. I fully agree. So this is a album that I listened to, I'd say, for the first time like 2-3 weeks ago. But ever since I listened to it, it has quickly gone up the ranks of just one of my favorite albums of the year. And after kind of sitting with it for a little bit, I have to give it up to number 8 spot, which is Creeper's last album, Sangivore. So this is an album I brought to you, Quinn, when we were kind of going through what people were saying was their favorite albums, just kind of like, you know, just having a conversation about that. And this was the one that I told you, I was like, it was labeled as a dark opera rock. Not opera, I should say a dark rock theater. That'd be more appropriate. And I was like, man, or a metal rock opera kind of vibe. So I heard that and I'm like, man, I have not listened to anything that kind of fits that vibe in a minute, but I'm a big fan. And as soon as I listened to the first song, I knew this album was going to be something special. So Creeper, they kind of before this album were, you could definitely kind of consider them an emo band. They have a lot of very dark imagery. And something that's cool about their style and their music is the main songwriter he kind of started as a screenwriter. So he brings a level of storytelling to the albums that like are really, really interesting. And I think really kind of give a layer and a character to them, especially when you dive into the music videos as well. But I would say before this, biggest influence was definitely the Misfits and just kind of like, you know, that that era of emo kind of rock. This is a way more cinematic piece compared to what they've done in the past. And it just has this really cool, like almost Phantom of the Opera combined with like a little bit of Avenged Sevenfold, a little bit of, you know, like these more dramatic elements to it within the rock, and then classic rock on top of everything, that just like, it's just a perfect combination. And I think that like the whole album from top to bottom is just filled with so many great melodies, amazing guitar playing, just really cool storytelling. I'd say the only thing that makes me feel a little type of way is that it's a very satanic album. Like it definitely is, like there's definitely lines like having sex on top of a burned church and stuff like that. It's like, you know, it's a little much for me personally, but outside of that, it's just such a fun, enjoyable listen that I kind of like overlook those elements and just enjoy it for what it is. And you know, I obviously think it's kind of done in a tongue-in-cheek way too. So I don't think it's a satanic album, you know, in like real spirit or anything. But like it definitely has that theming to it. But yeah, man, it's just it's a really, really, really good album. I think it's extremely underrated on just kind of like, you know, talking to people and not really hearing about it. And I'm definitely glad that I checked out Album of the Year's website and saw it on the list, because it quickly rose up the list for me for sure.
Josh Eby, going back to you, what is your eighth favorite thing of 2023?
Okay, my number 8 of this year is a little movie called Theater Camp, which came out back in July.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I thought this was a very fun, goofy movie, which at the same time made me feel very nostalgic for my times in high school and college theater. And it's a movie about members in a New York theater camp have to band together and raise money after their founder falls into a coma. And it's set as a mockumentary, and I found it just really funny, making fun of a whole bunch of stereotypes, as well as just the drama community in general. I think Molly Gordon and Nick Lieberman did a great job writing and directing this movie. I think it could have easily fallen into the trap of taking itself too seriously, which it never does. It sort of knew what it was, and I thought the writing was good and the timing of the jokes for the most part was pretty good. I thought it dragged a little bit towards the second three quarters, but I was having such a fun time watching this movie, which was about 90 minutes, so it wasn't too long, that I didn't even mind it. So that was just such a thrill, I would say. Top things of 23, that definitely fit the bill.
Nice. Yeah. Theater Camp was a fun watch. I liked that movie. My number 8 favorite thing of 2023 was the final season of Reservation Dogs. I was a big fan of the show when it originally came out. I think 2021, maybe. I just like being able to, because in season 2, they pretty much wrap up the story they already set up in season 1. So I think they took a take that I think really worked of building, like, the quest for so long for these characters is to go to California, not only just to, you know, bury their friend who committed suicide, if people didn't know the plot of Reservation Dogs, but also to, they're kind of tired of being in this area they're in. So they want to get out. But as the show goes along, the characters do build a community with the older generation and such. And I like that we get to see the past of the older characters and, you know, legacy being an important part of this particular season. And like I said, taking the journey of like, oh, the characters are, this is like their journey of like coming back and staying in this like small community, and being able to tackle some pretty heavy themes. There's some episodes that really, really hit you hard, but they have comedy to balance it out, which I just think was a really great show. I really love the Ethan Hawke was in this show randomly. Like it was pretty awesome. There's just like little cameos like that where they, you know, go above and beyond the performance for a TV show, which, you know, I just really appreciate. And I appreciate I'm blanking on the, I always remember his name, but honestly, the whole cast, crew, directors, I appreciate all of them for, you know, getting to tell a story that's just not really told in media of, yeah, and I just appreciate them giving me a little history of their world. So yeah, final season of Reservation Dogs, great show. I think, It's a little underrated. I think everyone should watch it. It's 3 seasons. It's on Hulu. If you just like FX shows, it's one of the best. So yeah, give it a watch. But Josh, man, we're kicking it back to you. What is your number 7 favorite thing of 2023?
So this is one that's very important to me. Something that I don't feel like you guys are gonna have, because this was kind of a personal thing for me, and I just want to really get people to watch the show. My number 7 pick is going to be Warrior.
Okay, yeah.
So this show, I spent a lot of my time trying to watch things that other people recommend, just because I don't like wasting time. Yeah. My time has like really shrunk down to like what I'm able to do on a daily, you know, basis, because I'm trying to do so many things. So it's very rare for me to just sit down and be like, I'm interested in this. No one's ever said anything about it. I haven't seen anyone really talk about this thing, but I'm interested enough to sit down and watch, right? I think those experiences are so special, especially in someone's life where you just kind of find something almost randomly. And it just gives you everything you could possibly want. The thing with Warrior, if you guys don't know, is it is based upon the never-before-done script / storyboarding that Bruce Lee did before his death. And it's his most personal story that really kind of dives into racism and specifically the Chinese immigration in early scale America. And on top of that, it's this extremely fun, pulpy martial art filled romp that has good levels of humor, just fantastic filmmaking. There's a lot of style and art to it. It's something that I really think has got kind of lost in the shuffle of a lot of great shows. And, you know, there's a few shows that I left off the list because I knew that, you know, either Quinn or Josh might speak about them. And, you know, I just, they didn't leave as much as an impact on me as Warrior did. Season 3 was this year. I watched the entire show this year, though. So from season 1 to season 3, I just think it got better and better. Season 3 ended on such a fantastic note. And just a little bit ago, we found out that it was canceled. Now it is, the 3 seasons are going to be on Netflix. If you guys haven't seen it on HBO or on Max, I would definitely recommend you guys to check it out if you haven't already, and to really just try to give it maybe another shot at being picked up by Netflix, because it's just a really special show. I think there's just a level of care and dedication that is, you know, kind of something that you don't get to see often enough, because I feel like a lot of TV shows and movies and whatever, they kind of get bogged down in a lot of the behind the scenes drama and whatnot. And I think what's cool about this show is that it's made by such passionate people and just people that have such respect for, of course, Bruce Lee and you know, everything he kind of brought to the table of the story he wanted to tell, but just a level of, you know, enjoyment of action film and, you know, just like the storytelling that they really go into, which, you know, really does get heavy at points. They do not pull punches when it comes to their conversations about racism and, you know, the levels of which, you know, specifically how when the Irish came to America, just the mistreatment that was kind of done to them that, you know, instigated them to be, you know, ruthless back at you know, at other, you know, different ethnicity groups and all this stuff. And I just think it was done in a really skillful way. I think the first shot of the show is so perfect in how to come, like, how it basically leads into everything else. And I think as soon as you see that first shot, you're going to know if it's for you or not. Yeah, if you guys stick with it, I just think you're going to really enjoy the characters. You're going to enjoy the writing. The action is fantastic. It only gets better each season. Yeah, I just am very passionate about the show, and I really do hope it gets to be picked up to finish out what story they were trying to tell.
Absolutely. Josh Eby, what is your 7th favorite thing of 2023?
All right, so my number 7 is a bit of a normie pick, but I'll explain why. I really liked Legend of Zelda: Tears of the Kingdom. I think it's by far the best video game of the year, and it's for 2 reasons. Oh. The first is that Legend of Zelda is probably my favorite video game franchise. Has been ever since I first saw the beauty that is Ocarina of Time. And you know, after Breath of the Wild came out in 2017, they've been hyping up this game for 6 years. And so the reason it's on the list, even though everybody loves the game, is for a game to be hyped up over 6 years and then still be phenomenal on its release and live up to all of that hype. The world was beautiful. The physics worked great. The game didn't break. And the lateral width of what you can do in this game is amazing. Just the fact that you can run around and goof off or follow a pretty serious quest to the end is impressive. And I just love the art style and the Koroks, these little leaf creatures, and all the different weapons that you can build. I thought it was a very well executed game. And as someone who's a lifelong fan of Legend of Zelda, I was just so grateful that it lived up to the hype.
Heck yeah. All right, my number 9th is an oldie. It did not come out in 2023. It came out actually a long time ago. That is the Tatami Galaxy. This is an anime that came out in 2010. And what I really enjoyed about this was a show that I've tried to watch a couple of times, but I just never was in the mood. But randomly, I don't remember when it was, I just watched it and I've thought about it here and there since. It's just such a creative show that I really hope doesn't, people don't forget from the test of time. Like just the way, like not only is like the animation like gorgeous and does so many creative uses in like the animation, the film, the direction itself, but also taking a concept of being like multiple, you know, we've seen it in Everything Everywhere All at Once, and we've seen Marvel and superheroes do it all the time with these almost multiversity kind of things, but do it in a way of like the choices of like what would I do if I did this scenario, and ultimately coming you know, the main character coming to the conclusion he does. It was just, yeah, really, really creative show. It's also pretty funny as well. So yeah, this is like one of, like, it's in the top five for me of my favorite anime. Just such a creative show that I've just been thinking about for a while now, like of the many different themes of going through, because you don't really see it. This is an adult character too, in college, which is kind of an aspect you don't really see a lot of anime. It's kind of usually either high schoolers or you get an adult, but now a lot of times they're usually in an isekai as well. So it's just a little rare to see adult characters a lot of the times in anime. So I always want to champion one that has a character, because adults like animation too. So yeah, really, really great watch. But Josh, man, what is your sixth favorite thing of 2023?
So something that was kind of hard for me to do this year because of, again, time management was play video games. I moved, and during my moving process, my gaming PC was messed up, and is actually currently, I finally saved enough money to go get it repaired, so hoping for the best for that. But I wasn't really able to play too many games, and then I got a PS5, and I really enjoyed Spider-Man 2, don't get me wrong. Really enjoyed Spider-Man 2. I played God of War Ragnarok this year. Really enjoyed that one. But the game that has stuck with me the most, special shout outs to Midnight Suns. That game has some of the best Marvel character writing that has been in any adaption ever. And even though there's some grown worthy lines here and there, and the game's not exactly like a super polished experience the whole way, I really have to give shout outs to like that game specifically, because I think it has some of the most interesting takes on Marvel characters in any adaption for the past 10 years. Like it really is special. And I do think the game is really fun too. So I just want to give a shout out to that. But my actual pick is the Resident Evil 4 remake.
Oh.
Resident Evil 4 is my second favorite game of all time. It is right behind Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater as my favorite game of all time. And it is a game that I've literally played through more than 20 times. I absolutely grew up with the PS2 and Resident Evil 4 as a cornerstone of my game playing during those times. So when the remakes of these Resident Evil started to happen, I think there was this hesitation of like, okay, are they actually going to do 4? Because 4 already has a more modern aesthetic to it. It doesn't necessarily need a remake in many people's opinion, including my own. But I was cautiously optimistic, and when the trailers and stuff came out, I was like, okay, this is going to be kind of its own thing, but it's going to take elements from the original game and you know, do something interesting with it. I was expecting it to be decent. I was really impressed. I think Resident Evil 4 Remake is the best Resident Evil game we've ever gotten. And that comes from a lifelong Resident Evil fan. I've literally played every single game under the sun. And I just think Resident Evil 4 Remake just really knew what they were doing when it came to capturing the appeal of the original and not taking away some of the more cheesier B-movie action from that original, and then still giving it a modern twist. Now, I don't necessarily think every decision was, you know, for the best when it comes to the transition, but I still believe that they did the best that they possibly could. And I think that when you remake a game that is literally one of the best games of all time, you are putting yourself in such scrutiny for being able to fuck that up. And I think the fact that they nailed it out of the park, in my opinion, is something that should be honestly studied and given all of its flowers to. I had such a blast with Resident Evil 4 Remake. Easily one of my favorite experiences this year, and just something that was really special for me and kind of felt like a full circle moment in my life, you know, as a child playing the original Resident Evil 4 and now being a grown man and playing the remake and seeing just the level of passion and care that they brought to it. It was a really beautiful moment. And yeah, absolutely. If you guys haven't played Resident Evil 4 and you guys are a gamer, gamers out there, I absolutely would recommend it over the moon.
Heck yeah. Josh Eby, what is your sixth favorite thing of 2023?
All right. Coming up next is Angel Face, the album by Steven Sanchez. My first music pick on the list. Ooh. I think that this guy is bringing something, a new twist to the doo-wop genre of the 50s, just putting it in front of a modern audience in a way that I find really impressive. He takes sort of this, like I said, doo-wop style, old crooners of the 50s, but then blends it with a warmer, more nasal tone, I guess I would say, to create this happier nostalgia. And I think that he's still looking for his niche a little bit. I wouldn't say it's a perfect album by any means, but Sorry, am I cutting out?
No,
you're good.
I'm good.
All right, my mic just made a lot of noise. Sorry. But I just really enjoyed it. And I think that I'm excited to see what he has to come as his first album. I think it's a really good shot.
All right, sweet. My number six favorite thing of 2023 is a person. It's a YouTuber called Colleen's Manga Rex. I got into them because they kept kind of, the algorithm got me on this one, and I'll thank the algorithm, but also leave me alone, algorithm, of this YouTuber that talks about shoujo and josei, like manga, sometimes anime too. I appreciate them because they got me into not only some of like my favorite series of this year that I've experienced for the first time that I'll kind of talk about later in a later pick, but they also got me into some other YouTubers just from watching that, like Anime Teens and such. And yeah, I just really like their channel. I really like hearing their thoughts and appreciate what they do for the community, because the anime and manga community is very shonen and seinen focused. And, you know, I do like seinen. Shonen, I could give or take if you know my channel. But I just appreciate that they're talking about genres that just really aren't talked about very much in the community. So I wanted to give them at least a shout out because I experienced their channel this year. All right, Josh, we are in the top five. What is your fifth favorite thing of 2023, Josh Mann?
All right, we're going back to music. This was, and I really tried to like make sure that there wasn't recency bias with this one. So I listened to it about three or four extra times after the first listen to really confirm if I felt the type of way I felt about it, and I absolutely do. It is Lana Del Rey's last album.
Let me double check real quick. Something great, it's called pick. Like something Boulevard.
Something under Cashel or Hollywood Boulevard. What the fuck is it called?
It's a long title. I remember that.
Yeah, it's did you know that there's a tunnel under Ocean Boulevard? There we go. Yeah, very, very long title. I apologize for not remembering that. But this album is just an absolute banger. I am not the biggest Lana Del Rey fan, so it kind of takes something very special for me to like really connect with when it comes to her music. I've always loved the production. I've loved the instrumental palettes that she chooses, but sometimes vocally, I think she leaves a little bit to be desired. I think, you know, sometimes her melodies aren't as sticky as I would like them to be. This album has none of those issues. I think it's an easy 9 out of 10 for me. There's really nothing to say except for it is just an absolutely fantastic singer-songwriter pop album. And I think the themes, the topics, the level of time that it has to dive into her personal life and still capture that aesthetic that Lana Del Rey is known for, and really just do some interesting things when it comes to vocally, when it comes to songwriting choice wise. You know, take a song like AW, aka American Whore. It's the levels of like the breakdown and just like what it does is so weird and interesting. It always was impressing me and surprising me. And yeah, I think this is definitely my new favorite Lana Del Rey album. I really did like Norman fucking Rockwell. But this is definitely my new favorite. And I think what's really cool is like she didn't really hype this album up. She just kind of let it speak for itself. And I think that was a really cool, really cool moment. So yeah, I definitely think this album is well worthy of this higher spot for sure.
Great pick, Josh. Big fan of that album. It didn't make my list, but I did really like that album. Josh Eby, what is your fifth favorite thing of 2023?
All right, next up, we got a movie. I would say for me, number five is Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
Great pick.
And I saw this the week it came out in theaters. I was super excited. And what stood out to me the most, and the reason it's on this list, is the animation quality was phenomenal. Not necessarily my favorite animation style, but it matches the first one, and it's unique and it's bright and colorful. And I think they did a good job with it. It achieved what they were trying to. But the level of detail that every scene had, not just in the facial expressions and the movement of our main characters, but the background has so much detail. Every character in the background has facial expressions and detail, and they're all changing. And in scenes where we get hundreds of Spider-Men, they all are detailed out and live up to the expectation that their comic deserves. And special shout out to Spider-Punk, obviously. Looked great. And you could tell they spent a lot of time with that model specifically. And I just thought it was impressive that there was such fluidity, like I said, to the background characters. And then I thought the score was good. I thought the writing and the plot was good. Wasn't a huge fan of the main villain, but I can see they're setting up for something more, and I'm just really excited to see the sequel. Really great movie.
Great pick, Josh. Big fan of that movie. I think I accidentally said series, but my 2023 list is just animation in general, so it is like movies as well. So this didn't make my list just because of that rule, but do I really need to tell you Across the Spider-Verse was good? You all saw it. I saw all the memes. Come on.
Yeah, come on.
Great, great movie. Ah, Josh, man. Oh, wait, no. Wait, I skipped myself. All right.
Yeah, let's make sure the host is given his fair share here.
Sorry, I just got excited. My fifth favorite thing of 2023 is also a movie. It is May, December.
Hell yeah. Just watched it yesterday.
Oh, man. This movie is... At first, I was like, I don't know about this. Like, I don't know if I'm with critics on this one at first. Mm-hmm. The cinematography is like really bad. I'm not really in love with it, and I could see why it is the way it is. But I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. We got a guy from Riverdale. Like, what's going on here? But I was blown away at how intense but also funny this movie is. I wasn't expecting it to be funny. I didn't really know about what's this based on of. I know it's inspired by a true story. Like this movie, like Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore and even Charles Melton, the guy Riverdale, like some phenomenal performances from all three of them. And what I really appreciate about the movie is, I definitely can't fully relate to like any of these like characters, but it did have me reflect on certain things, in my past of like, oh, this is how it could have been if it went that way. Just to kind of mention that a little bit more so I don't sound like a weirdo. I also had a crush on like a teacher back in middle school, and I can see how like reflecting on the Charles Melton character, I can see how that puts them in a difficult position, how that could be like uncomfortable. And that doesn't have me like forgive, because I don't really love like mainly what like a lot of these people do, especially like Julianne Moore, and like I don't know. But I think what's cool about like really interesting what the movie does is it always like flips back to another character, like they seem to be in the wrong, and then it gives you like a different perspective. So it's definitely like one of those like multiple watches to get different takes on it. And it's been a very much a thinking movie for the past couple weeks since I've seen it. I've just really enjoyed the movie, and you know, like most art, the good and the bad, I like that it helps me reflect on emotions I just never thought about until now in my past and such. So yeah, just really good movie. And I hope, I think, I don't know if, how well they're going to do in Oscars, and that who cares about Oscars or whatever, but I don't know. I hope at least they get some rewards, at least the performances. I think they all do a great job. So yeah. Moving on, Josh, man, kick it back to you. What is your fourth favorite thing of 2023?
Well, I do want to say real quick, I very much would have had May, December on at least close to my list. I did just watch it yesterday, so I didn't want like, you know, extremely fresh, you know, things on the list. But I definitely agree with everything you had to say about it. And I wanted to say that ending is probably the best ending of the year. I'm gonna keep it a buck. That ending is definitely a highlight of the whole year, in my opinion. Can you guys still hear me?
I can.
Okay, just making sure that you kind of like cut out for a second. So my number four pick is another movie that I, ever since seeing, with you actually, Quinn.
Oh.
I could.
Bo's not... Afraid.
that might be an honorable pick for the worst films of the year, but that's a different conversation. Is a movie that just meant the world to me as a horror fan, and I think you know where I'm going with this.
Oh yeah,
it is Talk to Me.
All right.
So we had an Evil Dead movie come out this year as well, and I don't want to compare Evil Dead and Talk to Me too much, but all I'll say is that Evil Dead has an appeal to it based on the fact that it's an extremely fun take on possession and just like, you know, these more gory elements, right? I think what Talk to Me really brought to the table was a fresh version of that. Not necessarily taking, you know, straight from Evil Dead or anything. It's definitely doing its own thing. And I think that all that creativity and originality needs to be celebrated. But this movie just bangs, man. It's not perfect. There are things about it that, like, you know, on a second watch that I was like, you know, kind of like, okay, this is, you know, maybe not needed or whatever. But when you take it from the standpoint that it's a first time directing, you know, effort from a YouTuber, and the level of which it came out already as a first film, man, the excitement I have on the next thing that the Rocka Rocka Brothers do is ungodly amounts. I'm super hyped for whatever they do next. I know that they're going to do a Talk to Me too. Super excited for that, but just anything they're attached to, I'm on board, because they clearly know how to make something that is fulfilling, satisfying, a thrill ride, and just really doing new, interesting things within the horror genre. I can't stress that enough. Like, this movie just fucking hits, man. And I think the fact that it has the backdrop of Australia, and kind of, you know, there's not enough movies made in Australia. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Especially hits. And I think that definitely deserves some praise and acclaim for that alone, because it's just a cool backdrop. It's nice to have a different kind of setting for once, and just all of the first time like actors that are in it just fucking killed it. I do think, like I said, it's not perfect, but what's there is just so damn good. And like movies like Talk to Me, when you see them, there's a kind of a vision of how you want everything to wrap up. And I think when a movie does that, and it kind of lands the way that you expect it to, but also on like doubles down on it in a way you're like, oh shit, this is, you know, even doper than I could have imagined it to be. I think endings like that deserve a really special place in my heart specifically. And I think this movie just left me with just such a grin on my face afterward. I'm like, yeah, that's how you end a fucking movie. And yeah, I just had such a great time. I think the Rocka Rocka Brothers just absolutely nailed this movie. And yeah, I can't. It is my favorite horror film of this year. It might be my favorite horror film of the last 10 years. It's just something that I think I can endlessly rewatch, and I just have to give it a very high position within the list, because I had such a good time with it.
Great pick, Josh. Really good movie. Something I did want to shout out real quick is you did mention the actors. I'm also excited to see where the lead, Sophie Wilde, goes.
Absolutely. Well,
because she has a very difficult performance in this movie. And I just think she knocks it out of the park for being an actress I've never seen before Talk to Me. So I'm also excited to see where her career now goes, because the movie did really well, which shows that, you know, this, and with Barbarian the previous year as well, 2022 as well, is people want new horror. So I think it's really cool to see how that's gonna change. Yeah, great pick. Josh Eby, what is your fourth favorite thing of 2023?
All right, next on the list, we're going back to music, and I'm going to put the song Strangers by Nickel Creek on my list.
Woo!
And the reason is that it got me back into bluegrass and folk music. Woo! Nickel Creek is a bluegrass band, and I think this song is a masterpiece from the start to the end. The first two lines are, "It's been too long, stranger, guess even hard times fly." And they take these sort of two main lyrics, and I think that sets the tone for the whole song. They have super tight harmonies, and their voices blend very well with their instruments. And they use all of those things to set the mood of, we're strangers, we haven't talked in a while, it's been a long time, we don't really know what to talk about, so we'll talk about the weather. but I'm excited to see you and talk to you again. And the lyrics are really simple the whole time, but it is a beautiful song. If you haven't listened to it, I recommend it. And this song, when I heard it, like I said, got me back into bluegrass and folk, which I would say in 2022, I didn't listen to very much of, but this year, just the string instruments and the way they use their voices, it's an incredible track.
Great pick, Josh. All right. I also have a folk album on my list for music for my number four, and that's Kara Jackson's Why Does the Earth Give Us Love?
Nice.
Oh my gosh, this album is just it was on my birthday 20 and I still listen to it. I love it so much. It's just so good. Like just the melodies, her vocal performances, the writing, it's like sad, but it's also got some comedy in it too, and just a really great listen. So much to get from each listen. And to be a new artist as well, just really impressive. I'm really like chomping at the bit to see like what is her like next album or EP or whatever her next project is going to be, because I just need more Kara Jackson in my life. Just a great album to start off with their career. Yeah, love it. Josh, man, what is your third favorite thing of 2023?
So this is really difficult, guys, and I want you to understand, because so I have two more albums that I'm going to be talking about on my list. And I really struggled to figure out which album was going to take the top spot. And I still am like kind of contemplating, but the album I'm about to speak about is so important to me. Both of these albums I'll speak about are so important to me, but this, I annoyed the fuck out of Quentin about this album because I so desperately needed someone to just understand like how beautiful and incredible the new Suzanne Sonfer album is, Blami. It is one of the most beautiful pieces of music I've ever listened to in my life. I knew from two songs in that it was going to be an album of my life contender. Like, seriously. It means so much to me. And I there's no words that I can really even use to describe how great it is. I just want to read an anecdote from the artist herself. It's just a very quick kind of saying about what this album is, because I think it encompasses everything that I could possibly say about it. And that is, I want this album to be an antidote to the darkness that dominates our culture today. I want to show that there's another way to see reality if one dares to take the leap of hoping for a more beautiful world. That is exactly what this album makes me feel. It renews my spirit. It makes me feel hope. It gives me inspiration to live. It is such an important piece of music in my life. And though I, for some reason, because there's such a fantastic album that I'm also going to talk about, it doesn't hit that top spot for me just on replay and listenability. It just means so much to me. I cannot recommend this album enough. If you guys have not listened to Suzanne Sonfer's Blami, most of it is spoken in a language you won't understand, and that's intentionally, which is Old Norse, which is just super dope, by the way. Just the fact that there's this amazingly beautiful poetic album that's also in Old Norse is just super dope. But it's okay, because you don't need to understand every single word for you to feel how beautiful and how important this album is. And I hope that it changes someone's life just like it did for me.
Great pick, Josh. Josh Eby, what is your third favorite thing of 2023?
My number three is actually a book. I know we don't speak a lot about books on this channel, but it is a book. It's called In Memoriam, and it was written by Alice Wynn. It's her first novel, and it takes place during World War One. And it's a romance, which is surprising it's on this list because I don't read a lot of romance books. But it's a romance between two male soldiers in World War One. And the reason that this book really captivated me is it wasn't trying to be profound, and yet it was. I think a lot of media just tries really hard to be profound in every sentence or every lyric or every scene. But this simply was just throughout the different scenes and chapters, like silently profound in a way. I think it struck me, I've never read a story like this or seen a piece of media like this. You know, normally the man goes off to war and it's a romance between him and his wife who's back home, and they're going through very different experiences, and then they get back together and try to make it work, or one of them dies. But in this book, they go to war together. In a time when, you know, gay marriage, let alone being gay, is a crime. And so they have that internal struggle, but they're also going through one of the most horrific events in human history, and that's a world war. And I just think it was beautifully written, and I would recommend it to anyone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. My next pick is for my third favorite thing in 2023 is Past Lives. I just love this movie. I guess a negative you could say, maybe it is just too perfect of a movie. I don't know if that's a negative, but I don't know. I just really can't think of something I dislike about the movie. It's just, it's tragic. It's awkward. Just the performances are so well done by the whole cast. I appreciate the director for telling, sharing their story. First time director as well. I think what I appreciate as well with that being, you know, her being a first time director, the director of this, actually, I'm blanking on her name. I'm actually going to look up her name real quick, just because I want to show her all the respect. But going off of what I was saying, I'm really enjoying like this renaissance of like first time directors. Like, Josh, man, I know you saw this movie, but Cecily Song is the director I'm thinking of. Yeah, I'm excited to see what she sees next or makes next, but I'm liking this renaissance of new time directors. In 2022, we had I'm blanking on the movie. I'm just blanking today. Whatchamacallit? Josh, what's the movie with Paul Mescal?
After Sun.
Going through a divorce. After Sun. I think I'm really liking this renaissance of like just these great movies with just that don't have a huge budget, that are just, you know, romance and drama, and, you know, they just, the filmmaking's not like anything crazy, but it still does look beautiful. And just having them share their stories with us. After Sun was also a first time director, so I'm excited to see what 2024 gives us. If I'm being honest, Past Lives has stuck with me for so long as well, not just because I'm a big romance fan. But I honestly was debating giving up movies. People really praise 2023, and I do think it got better once we got, after the strike. I think the back half was really good. and so I could finally go back to the theater. But this, everything before that, honestly, I watched a ton of dog shit. Like some of the worst things I've seen. Like,
yeah, shout out to 64.
Yeah. So, oh my God, 65.
Oh, 65.
What a fucking terrible movie. So many awful action blockbuster movies. Like the comedy, like just so many bad movies, right? I'm like, man, I don't know if this year is a good year. But when I saw this movie, I just stopped for a while before driving back home and just thought about, wow, that's the power of. There are other movies I really enjoyed as well. Like I really enjoyed Poor Things and a lot of other movies, but this movie just takes the cake for me. Like it's in my top five favorite movies of all time, just for not only being just a great movie on its own, but also just saving movies for me. So yeah, really appreciative of Past Lives. But I will stop my rant and we will go back to Josh Mann. What is your second favorite thing of 2023?
Yeah, I just want to say, as someone who has also watched Past Lives, just I think I agreed with everything you said. Just an absolutely fantastic pick. The only reason it's not on my list is because I knew you were going to have it on yours, and I didn't want to be too redundant with it. But yeah, please, people, go see Past Lives. That movie is really important. So here it is, my favorite album of the year, and I want to say it's not even close, but obviously it was very close with Blami. But at the end of the day, I can't lie to myself. The last Sampha album, Lahai, is so fucking good. It is so to the brim packed with amazing songwriting, fantastic electrical production, amazing vocal melodies and harmonies, and such beautiful control and immersion in this world that Sampha has created. It's been 6 years since the last Sampha album. I think it got to a point where, unlike Frank Ocean, where there was even hints of him possibly coming out again, Sampha didn't have any hints. There was the occasional feature. I remember as soon as Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers came out and I saw that Sampha feature listed on it, I was like, holy fuck, does this mean something? And it did. And this album fucking delivered 1,000 times over for me personally. My favorite song of the year is Suspended off this album. Oh my God.
I've been drinking my love.
And it's so difficult because I can also put Spirit 2.0. I can put Dancing Circles in that same conversation. I can put Can't Go Back. There's just so many great songs in this album. I absolutely love the poetic metaphor of Jonathan L. Segal's novel being utilized throughout the whole album and telling the story of that. I love its deep exploration of the search for perfection and finding yourself in the peaceful moments of quiet. And also as Sampha has become a father and putting that in, I mean, there's holy shit. There's very few things that can make me cry as much as the first time I listened to Evidence, which is just a beautiful lament just a beautiful song for you know, talking about just what having a child has done for Sampha in his spiritual and his physical journey in this world. And I think he connects it so well to the audience and the listener that it's almost too personal, it's almost too beautiful. But yeah, man, there's just nothing else I can say about this album. It is from the top to the bottom packed with bangers, amazing songs, and just absolutely fantastic production. It is my favorite album of the year. like I said, went back and forth between this and Blami, but if I'm being honest, I listened to the Sanfa album way more in comparison. I checked the charts and just saw that it was my most listened to album of the year. So it deserves this spot full heartedly.
Great pick, Josh. Yeah, big fan of this album. Josh Eby, what is your second favorite thing of 2023?
All right, my number two is an artist. Snail's House is my favorite artist of 2023.
Ooh.
And Spotify Wrapped would agree, by far my most listened to artist of 2023.
Hell yeah.
He is a electronic producer, so there's sometimes lyrics, but most of the time there's no lyrics to his music, and he creates a dreamy, almost nostalgic, reminiscent of 8-bit video game music tracks. And I would say that each one is more about the atmosphere it creates and the feelings that it invokes. And I think that's why I enjoy it so much, because I can listen to it when I'm at the gym, but I can also listen to it while I'm chilling with the lights off. There's just a super wide variety to the type of music, whether it's upbeat and pump like at the gym, or just trying to chill after a long day. And I think that breadth is pretty impressive with electronic music. You know, I'd say most people either fit into the super pump dance tracks, or they're more lo-fi chill. And I just enjoy it. And I think that I normally listen to music with lyrics because I kind of get bored when music doesn't have lyrics, unless it's, you know, super intricate, classical. I can enjoy that. But this just always keeps me entranced. And so I would recommend Snail's House.
Heck yeah. My second favorite thing of 2023. It was tough because the shows in particular were really difficult because there were a lot of last seasons and a lot of sequel seasons.
Yep.
You know, I watched all of Succession for the first time this year and, you know, really enjoyed it, but that didn't make it. Barry's final season was really good as well. I enjoyed it, and it was really close, but it didn't make the list. But The Bear season 2 is just on another level. I already enjoyed the first season quite a bit. I watched it. I don't mean to brag, but I watched it before the hype.
True. Got me on the hype.
I just am impressed. Like, what it does what a second season should do. It does everything that I we needed to build up to with the first season. We have every character in the show. They have their own episode where we get to know more about them, and we get to see all their growth. But we also, you know, it still is about, you know, Carmi's journey as well. And we have what I really love that they did is they took, because with season 1 it was just so stressful, and it wasn't that stressful in the beginning for a while, you know, with everything being a little lighter. But then that finale being just so stressful with Carmi in the freezer.
Oh, so good.
And like keep panicking, and he breaks up with his girlfriend as he's like in the freezer, didn't mean it. And like having to, and I think like why it makes my list, not only for, you know, just all of the characters like really shining this season, but also just the message of this particular season with debating on, I think, anyone that's creative or owns a business or just has to make that decision of like what is really important, and like, is it to like the balancing of like your passion, like your career, of what, like what it is you want to do in this world, or finding those connections, finding love. And it's been something that I've related to for like being in, you know, most of my 20s, being single and trying to create, not like in a creative sense, but shining a light to like pieces of art just like this that really impacts me a lot. Yeah, just a really phenomenal show. Like shout out to the director, the team. Like they filmed this immediately after they were the season one came out too, and like doing that before even like doing that in such a crunch time, but still delivering on even a better season. Just what a phenomenal show. If you haven't seen The Bear, go on Hulu, give it a watch. It's so good. I'm just really excited to see where seeing all these actors too in other movies and such as well has been really exciting. So I'm excited to see where this team goes further. But Josh, man, kicking it back to you. What is your favorite thing of 2023?
So I have to just say yes, Chef, to The Bear season two, because yeah, you absolutely beautifully put that. Just a, such a great show. And you know, again, shout outs to Succession, shout outs to Barry, you know, also, you know, great seasons. But Chester, I do agree with you. I think say again.
I was just shouting out some other shows. Shout out to Full Circle, shout out to Beef.
Yep, absolutely. Fantastic shows. And I really was close to putting a show on my list, but again, I kind of knew you'd come through with the show of the year, so I felt like I didn't need to. My pick, and this is going to get very personal and very deep, so bear with me, guys, is this was the year that I finally made stuff. And when I say that, I don't mean just making things for the sake of making things. This was the first year that I put my foot forward and am really trying to learn how to create things in a way that is going to not only help me on a career sense or, you know, get me out of, you know, the position that I am, but really make something that I make things that I get to feel genuine joy and passion in doing. I technically began a filmmaking journey a few years ago when me and my friend made a film called Righteous Confession. And honestly, it was a really bad time. I was very much caught in a perfectionist mindset. I was very controlling. I was very just not pleasant to be around. And I had this like vision in my head that like if it wasn't done in this specific way, that it was all failure and that it wasn't worth doing. And when you watch the film, as much as I'm very proud of it existing as a moment in time and a moment to show where I was, and even the stepping stone that it also is in my life as well, you can clearly see that seep through the film. And then I made something more intimate and downscale with a this little Spider-Man Peter Parker fan film called No More, that was just kind of this thing that I've wanted to do for a while, which was kind of create a character moment, you know, not focusing on Spider-Man's powers and, you know, all the stuff that we couldn't do from a logistical standpoint, but just the characterization of Peter Parker and just kind of discussing what it felt like to have the expectations and, you know, quote unquote responsibility that comes along with that, in a way that, you know, connected with me as the writer. And, you know, I got to kind of do that as a project, and, you know, that one felt a lot more genuine and purposeful and whatever. But this year, this summer, I made Nothing Personal, and that is a film that your host of the show is actually in a cameo appearance, if you haven't seen. But that is a film where everything finally came to a head and I felt able to finally let go of the elements of myself that have kind of held me back, from a perfectionist mindset to just being over controlling to these and that. Obviously, still things I was working through in the process, but this was the first time I was really able to let those things go and make something that I'm extremely proud of. There's no part of the Nothing Personal experience that I had this year that made me feel like it was a step back in any way. It was all a step forward. And it taught me so many things. It showed me so many things. It was so fun to make and experience. And I had such an honor being able to just create this thing that a lot of people were able to connect with and see. And, you know, even the views that we have on it, though I don't really, you know, consider views to be the be all end all thing, it just meant the world to me that a lot of people like actually gave it a shot and you know, was able to just, you know, see this thing that we spent the summer making. And I just am extremely thankful for anyone out there that has seen it or will see it and all that. And it was just an extremely important moment in my life. But I say make things in general because it's a two-part, and I don't want to take too much time. But the second part of this whole thing was this is the year where I was finally able to take music that I've been making and perform it live. And even more recently, literally as the last thing I did this year, make money doing so, showing, you know, some sort of financial gain. You know, obviously money isn't important when it comes to the art and stuff, but it does definitely give you a sense of, you know, purpose and feeling like this stuff is amounting to something when you're able to actually see some kind of monetary income from it. And this is a process I've spent about 5 years trying to get myself mentally conditioned to being able to do, because I've thrown literally away hundreds of songs because I felt like they were shit, because I felt like they weren't worth anything. And I've genuinely have had suicidal inclinations based off of just trying to make music and failing and getting so caught in my head and just thinking that it was hopeless and that I would never be able to do anything. But after all these years, I was able to do two shows at the end of the year that showed me that not only is hard work and dedication and belief in yourself so important and can literally beat any odds or anything that stands in front of you, but to experience the sense of being on stage again, as I used to be on stage in high school and stuff, it was just such a magical moment. And I truly have felt more this year because of those two things: a sense of purpose, a sense of joy, a sense of content, and a sense of understanding within myself. And, you know, a real sense of progress as a human being. And I hope to only continue that into this next year and only build upon these foundations. But yeah, this year was an extremely important year for me. And I just want to thank anyone that either checked out my music or the film, or at the bare minimum has just listened to me go on this rant, because this was truly something that meant the world to me. And, you know, I'm so thankful for Quinn to be able to even give me the opportunity to speak on this stuff and to have this amazing session with the other Josh as well, where we're able to share and recommend you stuff that really matters, because I believe art really does matter, especially in, you know, this world that we live now, where it's so easy to get caught up in the doom and gloom of everything. And I think art is the perfect escape. It's the perfect thing that allows us to connect and find ourselves within the darkness. And, you know, I just want to say I'm extremely thankful for, you know, Quinn's friendship. I'm extremely thankful for Josh's friendship, and I'm extremely thankful for the opportunities that were given to me this year. Thank you.
Absolutely, man. Well done. Great pick for sure. I'll link his stuff in the description then. But yeah, definitely he had a good year. Go check out his stuff. You might also hear a familiar face and nothing personal as well. You might hear Josh Eby's voice maybe.
Ooh.
As a character. But speaking of Josh Eby, what is your favorite thing of 2023?
Well, let me tell you, that's kind of hard to follow up, but I do just want to say I'm proud of you, Josh. You've always been the idea man, the dreamer, but to see you make something concrete is really cool. And not just something throwaway where you're like, I got to get something out there, but something you put time and effort and the quality shows. But my number one show of this year has to be Blue Eye Samurai. And this animated show snuck it in under the wire. And I promise it's not recency bias. This show is incredible. It is a French-American action set in the Edo period in Japan. And it is a historical drama that they can obviously did a lot of research in. I'm no expert in Japanese history during the samurai age, but it seems like there's a lot of historical accuracy. But they take it and they put a modern twist on it, a modern sense or point of view. And there's commentary about racism. There's commentary about gender inequalities and transgenderism. And all of this is wrapped up in an amazing action piece. The plot is incredible. Episode 5 specifically is my favorite episode in the show. Not going to spoil it, but I was just impressed from the very beginning to the end that an American or French American animated show has the prowess that I would expect an anime to have. And I think I've been talking to various people about this for a while. You know, I'm hoping that the rise of popularity of anime in the West will bring about this sort of renaissance in Western animation. And I think this show is potentially the first of many that just hits the nail on the head. It is beautifully filmed in terms of, I guess, directed, I should say, and animated. And the voice acting is also really good, which is something that I would say Western shows sometimes are lacking on. Although, you know, Quentin's show here is a testament to how much better things are getting in that sense. Talk about a lot of great shows on here, but I'm just really excited for 2024 with this show sort of wrapping out 2023.
Hell yeah.
Have you guys seen it?
Yeah, I have
planned on seeing it.
So my process of it was I wasn't going to see it just because I didn't really love that it was a revenge story. I was like, I don't know if I really want to do it. You know, I just finished Vinland Saga season 2 recently. You know, I have no enemies, so I don't really feel like I need to see any more revenge stories.
Right, right.
But you just convinced me. I'm gonna watch it. Here soon. I was shocked. Like, I wasn't expecting that to be your number one. I don't know what your number one was gonna be, but I wasn't expecting that. Yeah.
We love it. Love it over here.
Yeah, well, once you watch it, we'll have to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. My favorite thing of 2023. It's Chiaifuru. It's just that watching this show and just being blown away on, you know, not just the animation. I mean, the animation is beautiful. But just like how layered all these characters are. Initially, I'm like, here we go. Okay, here's some tropes of, you know, we got the fat kid and the nerdy kid and the popular kid. But no, they went above those tropes. I also just appreciate, you know, I think in a lot of, not a lot, but like you, anime, it's very like half and half with a care. I just like seeing characters just sometimes they just are insecure and maybe not, you know, just a blank slate of they're either depression, a pervert, or really optimistic. I like that the characters in this are, they have their insecurities, and they have their, you know, they are positive, but they do have their flaws, and they just feel like real people other than, like, I don't want to keep crapping on, like, shonen protagonists and seinen protagonists as well, but it's just nice to see, like, just some layered characters from a show that it's pretty forgotten. And I know the manga, it's probably never gonna get an English translation in, like, physical media. I know it's online, you can get it, but regardless, I'm gonna support this thing as much as I can, and continue to rewatch and get thoughts on it, and read it as well, because it doesn't the three seasons that are out don't adapt all of the manga. It really just hit me, the power of, like, of connection, of, like, not only, like, having what I really enjoy about, you know, competition, stuff like that, what I enjoy from the shonen anime, what I enjoy from the sports stuff, with having, like, those characters that are good at it, characters that aren't good at it, wanting to be, but also, you know, just having all these characters love something that's just so, like, even loving Chiharu feels like an almost obscure thing as well. I know it's talked about from other YouTubers and such as well, so it's not like, I wouldn't say it's like obscure, but yeah, I just it's in contention of just being my favorite piece of art. It just really hit me. I need some more time with it to make that decision, but yeah, I just love everything about this show. I just think it's a masterpiece. And I just think it's on Crunchyroll. I don't know. It's probably other places, maybe. I don't know. There's three seasons of it. Give it a watch. You can watch, or you can read all the volumes on like Kindle and Amazon and stuff like that, but it's only digital. You can't get it physical. If you speak Japanese, if you can read and speak Japanese, that's not going to be a problem for you. You can read all the physical media. But yeah, just watch Chiharu. It's just such a incredible series that, yeah, I just can't say enough nice things about it. It just, I like that defined the year 2023 for me, was this show.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, that is it for us. Does anyone want to mention any honorable mentions before we get on out here?
I really enjoyed John Wick 4. Okay. thought it was just a really, really good action film. Also, if you're just talking action, Extraction 2 has some great action too. And I gotta shout out Extraction 2.
Okay.
It's not on my list because you don't need me to tell you that Oppenheimer was really good. That was incredible. I loved that movie.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Oppenheimer's good. I will not stand against Oppenheimer. It didn't make my list, neither did Barbie, but I definitely respect them from a cultural standpoint, and especially Oppenheimer for the filmmaking aspect of it. I do think it's an extremely well-made film.
Yeah, it didn't make my list either, but just had to shout it out. So well made, well written.
Oh yeah,
the dialogue was incredible.
I agree.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just gonna give a shout out to, this is somewhat recently, but I'm just gonna give a shout out to The Iron Claw. Just go see it. Yeah, it was a really good, really good drama. Yeah. Jeremy Allen White's in it as well, you know, from The Bear. So yeah, there you go. I'll just shout that one out. I know it's doing pretty well in theaters, but don't know. I just enjoyed. That was a recent one I watched that I really enjoyed. So,
so I didn't include this. This will be the last thing I say. I didn't include this because it technically isn't over till this week. But depending on how the rest of the year turns out, I do believe The Curse is probably going to be my number one thing at the end of this year. I could not say enough amazing things about it. Every episode is absolutely fantastic. The performances are spectacular. The filmmaking is fantastic. It is so creative. It's unique. It has a purpose. It has something to say. There's no show like it. Please, for the love of God, everyone out there, watch The Curse. I know it's on Showtime, so that's not convenient for people, but if you can get just a free trial for a week and then just go through the episodes, it finishes this Friday. Please, for the love of God, watch this show. It deserves all of the love and appreciation that it's gotten so far, and it still feels like it's an underground cult thing. So I'm trying to give it its flowers. It's most likely going to be my favorite thing of the year, probably by a fair bit. So we'll see how 2024 turns out.
Heck yeah. All right, that is it for us. Thank you to both the Joshes for joining me and sharing our loves of the last year, reflecting on not a great year for the world, but the media was at least good, and hopefully 2024 can be better.
Yeah, it was an honor, man. It was an absolute honor.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Looking forward to talking about this a year from now. What happened in 2024?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Absolutely. We will see you all next time. Stay tuned for the best animation of 2023.